Please be seated.
When I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, we received our news in a way that was typical for that time. Two newspapers showed up on our door every morning. And in the evening, if we wanted to watch the news, we could go to the one family television in the basement. My parents played NPR in the car, but my sister and I wouldn't have any of that. We always asked them to change it to music. We also had two beautiful sets of encyclopedias in our den, one for children and one for adults. When curiosity struck me, or there was that question that we couldn't answer at the dinner table, we'd grab the encyclopedia and see what they had to say. They were fascinating books. Today, as we all know, is different. Not worse or better, different. News is available as it happens in myriad formats. Search engines put more information at our fingertips than could ever be contained in one set of books. For those of us whom this has not always been the norm, we have had to adapt. At times, still, I feel overwhelmed by the sheer quantity of information I receive each day, or helpless at another news story that breaks my heart. Questions dodge through my mind, like, how should I respond? How do I make sense of this? Or thoughts of, if I only had more resources, I could help. Or when I've been on social media too long, I feel inadequate while marveling at everything everyone else is doing. Unhealthy thoughts of comparison plague me, like, am I doing enough? In these moments, I join my voice with Jesus' apostles today, responding to God with increase our faith. At this point in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus' followers have been with him for a lot of time. They have seen Jesus heal countless people. They have heard parable after parable and instruction after instruction. They have heard Jesus challenge the authorities of the day and unjust social structures, and they have been challenged by this. There has been so much mind-bending, life-changing information on the dusty road to Jerusalem that they are walking together. Right after last week's gospel of Lazarus, Abraham, and the rich man, and before the passage that Terry just read, Jesus adds a dense teaching about living together in community. He says, truth tell when your fellow disciples sin, and forgive seven times a day when they repent. In the disciples' words, increase our faith, I imagine Jesus' followers responding, yes, Jesus, and these things are really hard. Increase our faith so that we can do them. It's the very human mindset of, if only I have this, then I can do this. Yet how do you measure faith? What is enough faith? We just heard Jesus' response. Faith is beyond human measurement. You only need a little. Jesus redirects their thinking with a metaphor of a slave serving a master. I want to name the problems of Jesus' response to our ears. I encourage us to stay in that discomfort of his metaphor while contextualizing this gospel story. The understanding of slavery in Jesus' day was different than the tragedy of our American system of oppression. The Greek word doula, translated here as slave, can also be translated as servant, indicating that difference. Jesus is in no way justifying slavery in his response. We also must remember who speaks these words, Jesus. Jesus, who upends unjust social structures to the point where he dies on the cross. Jesus, who teaches later in Luke that he is among the disciples as one who serves. Jesus, who uses everyday images of our imperfect world to point to what God's kingdom can and will look like. In Jesus' response, I hear, it's not how much faith we have, it is who we have faith in. As people following in the way of Jesus, we are people of faith. At times, being people of faith means stating who our faith is in, or as today's gospel shows us, stating who we serve. At those times which we feel overwhelmed by the news, at those times when we question what the right thing is to do, in the places where we are comparing the worst part of ourselves to the best part of others and coming up short, we are called to stand in faith as people who serve God. In that place, we are instead invited to ask, God, where are you calling me to serve? Where are you directing our faith community to join your presence in the world? When are you calling us to receive the gifts of others who serve? When our attention is turned toward God in these questions, the distracting voices quiet, and our answers can come in. They may come in many forms. One of the ways they enter is in our God-given gifts and talents. What does this look like? A friend gave me permission to share an everyday story about her daughter. A couple years ago, her daughter was failing algebra. As a conscientious student, this was the first time my friend and her husband had ever faced this with their child. They went in to meet with a math teacher to ask for his advice and if their daughter should drop his class. He said he would come in early, 2 mornings a week until the end of class, to tutor their daughter. He didn't want thanks or payment. This was a part of his call to be a math teacher. By the end of the class, her grade was a B. My friend experienced God in this moment of being served. Or as Pastor Steve Garness Holmes describes and guides our thoughts in his poem, admire the heroes. Let their focus and perseverance fill you. But don't bother trying to emulate them. You'll only feel inadequate. Listen for what you yourself are called to do. The gyroscope in you that leans you. The magnet that pulls you towards something. Merely do what is in you to do. Don't try to be the hero who dashes out of the ranks. Be a mere slave to the passions you're given. The lowly servant of goodness and beauty and justice, quietly obedient to the voice within. Light is generated not by success, but by obedience to your gifts. Tie a rope around your waist and your vision. Follow humbly. That's all your heroes have done. When we stand in our place and serve our God-given gifts, our faith is always enough because it is grounded in God.